Okay, I'm out of breath. I'm back. Lord, I ran upstairs. I'm back with Michael Lynch. So we kind of was off to a little bit of a rocky start on the first one. So Michael is back, and we're going to finish the interview. We're probably going to have a mini series, Mike. Okay. So where did we leave off? Okay, so we're going to go back. I want you to tell me again. Just go back to the beginning, because I know, God, when you were speaking before, you were talking about how, you know, her and her friends had been drinking at the bus stop. You wouldn't have known that. You understand what I'm saying? I don't want to talk about what came out in the case. I want to know what happened. Okay. Yeah, I want to know what happened that day, because you would have had no prior knowledge of that. So don't, you know, try to think about what you think I want to hear. Just give me, okay. I don't care how ugly it is. Tell me.
Okay.
Whew, Jesus, my head. Go ahead. And speak up, please.
Okay. Started from when, the night in question?
Yes. You sound like an officer now. Yes. So you guys were down, you guys were down in the abandoned apartment and stuff. So,
yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we were in an abandoned apartment, me and three other guys, the 14-year-old and the two 15-year-olds. We were all together drinking and smoking.
Can I have you speak up just a little bit, honey, please?
Okay, we were all together drinking smoking in the abandoned apartment.
Uh-huh.
And the only reason we were in the abandoned apartment, because that's where the kids and everybody from the neighborhood, that was more like a hangout spot.
Exactly.
And, you know, whether it was for people to smoke, hang out, sleep, or runaways, you know, that's what we were doing then. So, you know, you were pretty much safe. So that's why we were in there smoking and drinking. But we didn't start smoking in there. We were somewhere else first. But somebody got to pulling on the patio door.
Uh-huh.
And
there
we
go.
Wasn't expecting anybody else.
Uh-huh.
We really didn't know.
Uh-huh.
So we jumped up, and the little kid Tyrone, the 14-year-old, he runs to he starts peeking out the window. He's like, "Oh no, we all right, we fine. We know him. So I'm kind of stuck, because I'm ready to jump out the window and try to run.
You thought it was like the police or something?
I really thought it was the police, or I thought it might have been a maintenance guy next door, because like I said, they said that the maintenance man lived next door. So I was ready to run, because I know we didn't belong in there.
I
turned around, and they opened the door, and the two guys came in with the girl behind.
Uh-huh.
So when we were all sitting in the living room in the little den, it's just like one big open spot, but it was one light that the kind of the screw light, where though you can dim the light real bright or make it real dim.
Uh-huh.
So we were all sitting in there, and we were talking, so everybody was, you know, speaking and greeting, because half of us didn't even know each other.
Okay.
So, you know, people speaking and you know, so everybody spoke there, because it wasn't to be an uncomfortable thing. We didn't even know nothing about they were coming in there. So while we were all sitting in there, one of the guys was like, "Man, what y'all doing down here?" He was like, "Man, we just chilling. But I mean, wasn't nobody really thinking nothing screwed up was going to happen that night or none of that. But the next thing I know, she started talking to the two young dudes that was already there, not the ones that boarded there. But the ones that were already there, we were all laid around comfortable, pretty much like we owned the place, you know, which we knew we didn't have no business being in. And it went from them being into the bathroom to a glass breaking in the bathroom. When the glass broke, the door came open. And like I say, it's a bedroom right across from the bathroom. They walked straight in the bedroom and started taking off their clothes.
No, so the glass broke in the glass broke in the bathroom. So that's where now I will fill in. I will come in with so I'm gonna fill in, you know, what was said at the trial, and then so the glass breaking, is that where he the alleged assault, because I believe she said that's when he hit her and knocked her out. She said that she lost consciousness or something. Okay.
Yeah, that's when that happened.
Okay.
That's when that happened. But they walked straight across and started taking off their clothes.
Uh-huh.
So when they started taking off their clothes, one of the guys that boarded it, he started having sex with her. But he punched her in the stomach.
Uh-huh.
Right, and you know, everybody sitting around there staring at each other, like, you know what I mean? Like, what was that for? And another guy started, he got up, and another guy started having sex with her.
So at this point, consent is out the window.
Yeah, at this point, consent is out the window. Yeah, at this point, consent is
there
out the
go.
Window. Because consent went out the window. When he punched her.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, consent went out the window when he punched her, because it was out of order, and I'm not condoning it.
It became
a rape.
Absolutely. There you go.
At that time, I'm scratching my head because I'm confused, conflicted, and I got a lot of. I'm already under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and I'm trying to get my own mind right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling the little kid that I was supposed to have been taking to DC with me. I'm telling him, let's go. And he's like, well, hold up. So I walk out and I tell the guy that's laying out in the living room still, I tell him, I wake him up. I'm like, man, I'm about to leave. I'm trying to get him to get up, but he's just laying there, so he's not really my concern. I go back, and I tell the little kid again. I'm like, man, let's go. He's like, man, all right. You know what I mean? So, I walked out and went straight out the front door. When I walked out the front door, I didn't stop. I went straight to my father's house.
Mm-hmm.
And when I woke up the next morning, my pager kept going off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was him. And he said, I need to see you. Man, it's real important. And I'm like, man, you all right? And I actually forgot about everything that transpired that night.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. So I went over to his house. And when I got over there, he was like, I went in there and spoke to his mom, his sisters, and, you know, their friend. I spoke to everybody that was in there. And we went and sat in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, man, you ain't going to believe what happened, man. You ain't gonna believe what happened last night. I said, what you talking about? Because I really forgot. And he was like, man, they beat her up. I said, they beat her up? What did you talk? He like, man, the girl. I'm like, the girl? Then it started hitting me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Then I started remembering what happened. So I turned around and I said, well, I said, man, you ain't do nothing, did you? And he was like, nah, I didn't do nothing. I ain't do nothing. I said, man, well, excuse my French. I was like, oh, well, fuck that shit. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Longs, you ain't do nothing. I said, well, I'm about to go to D.C. You want to go with me? I said, man, we can come back later on. He was like, nah, I'm going to chill for a little while. I went back to D.C. When I came back 4 days later is when I got locked up walking down the side street of my parents' house.
Mm-hmm. And what were you, when you got locked up, I mean, what was that about?
Well, I was walking down the side of the street, and I noticed one officer on foot coming through a stop sign. It was an undercover cop car sitting from pretty much all angles.
Mm-hmm.
We were just me, my stepbrother. We were going to meet his friend.
Mm-hmm.
So when we was walking up the side, they all just jumped out. So they started asking our names. So I didn't do anything wrong, and I didn't feel like I had nothing to hide. So I was like, I gave them my name.
Mm-hmm.
I said, man, my name is Michael. Rich. And they was like, you the one we need. So I told my little brother, I said, look, go get my father. And he was like, all right. And he was like, well, I don't think you will be getting no bond. And I said, well, get no bond. I said, why? What did I do? And they wouldn't tell me what I did. They said, well, you'll find out when you get to the police station. So I was like, okay. So when I got to the police station, they put me in a little room and they handcuffed me to a bench, and I stayed there until I went up to the detective's office.
Mm-hmm.
When I got up to the detective's office, they were saying, it's like, well, do you know this person? So first, I knew who it was, and I knew that it was a lie. I know that I was wrong. I said, nah, I don't know him. First, I kept denying knowing any of them. And then I said, yeah, I know him. And they said, yeah, well, you know, he started showing me different people's statements. And he's like, yeah, we know you didn't have nothing to do with beating nobody up. You didn't have nothing to do with beating nobody up, but you slept with him. And that's when, at first the interrogation was, they started asking me questions pertaining to my case before reading me my rights. So I was like, well, you know, but they were nice about it. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking, okay, well, I can answer the questions because I really didn't do nothing. So I'm like, well, okay, I know them. And they started showing me different people's statements, and they got my name, and it's saying that they all saying different things, saying, I slept with her too. And I'm like, what? No, I ain't sleep with nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. I said, man, I was there, but I didn't sleep with nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I said, man, yet alone, because first they was trying to say that I beat her up too. They was trying to get me to say all types of stuff. So I'm like, man, and I know that I gave different statements. Yes, I did. I was trying to get myself out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to get myself out of it. So when I got to the county jail and I seen everybody, you know, and I'm scratching my head because I want to know why I'm even sitting in there like that. They say, well, you know, the little guy said, oh, man, the other guy, one of the ones that ordered it, said, man, you hold out on niggas, man. If anybody went down, that meant you said something. So, yeah, you did it too. So I was like, what? So that's when the brain game started amongst us or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the detectives and some more officers came because they wanted to do a DNA. I flat out asked them. I said, well, look, will this clear me? They said, yeah, it'll clear you. I said, well, I'm willing to give y'all mine faithfully. Willingly, voluntarily, whatever. Take everything you need, which I gave them.
Mm-hmm.
But when other guys were told that they was gonna have to give them their DNA, it became real violent. One smacked a captain in the face with a stapler, a hole puncher, and it. But I gave mine faithfully, and I gave mine willingly because I didn't sleep with nobody.
So what came back on your DNA, Mike?
What came back on my DNA? They said that it was a stain on a coat. Let me say this. The coat that I had on wasn't my coat. I had a green coat, a green Eddie Bauer coat. And a friend of mine out in D.C. had like a colored blue coat, big jacket. Now, it matched what he had on, and what I had on, I wanted his. So we swapped coats. But what they said was, oh, well, it's a stain on his coat. But there's no They said that we're 100% sure that there is no DNA of hers on this coat.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that, they said, man, and we can't even really tell you that it's your DNA. I said, well, I know it's not my DNA, and I know it ain't hers, because I didn't sleep with her for it to be my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're saying that I had on, it wasn't, they're trying to say that it wasn't even, that wasn't even it. But that was that exactly what I had on that night.
So, the reason why we jump back and forth, okay, so what ultimately ended up happening, Mike? So you were charged with these rapes and everything, and go ahead. I'm about to tell your story for you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, what ultimately happened was when I went to trial, I still proclaimed my innocence in saying that but I couldn't testify at my trial because the attorney that I had said that I couldn't testify because I gave different statements, in which I admit I did, because I was trying to get out of it. I wasn't trying to be held yet alone as no rapist or nothing like that. I was trying to get out of it because I didn't, like I say, I really didn't sleep with her. So they asked her, they said, well, look, they asked her, what did he do? And well, let me go back. My lawyer asked her, my lawyer said, ma'am, let me ask you a question. Who physically assaulted you? She gave two names. And one of them was my name. And they asked her to describe me, to describe this individual. She said short, light skin, hazel ass, and a tattoo across her arm. So everybody looking at each other like, man, hold on, that's not him. So he flat out asked her. He said, well, was it him? She said, no. They said, are you sure? She said, yeah, I'm positive. I know who beat me up. They said, well, what did he do? And she looked at me, looked at the state's attorneys, because now I'm ready to say something. She looked back at me, looked back at the state's attorneys, put her head down and was like, he slept with me too. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, what? I didn't, my lawyer and them kept telling me, don't say nothing, just be quiet. But I was ultimately given 3 life sentences plus 25 years. They found me guilty of the beating her up too, giving her 2 black eyes and cutting and a busted lip. And she told them on her own that it wasn't me.
Wow. I need you to fill in something for me too. Remember when you were talking about the identification process? When your lawyer moved, to have the case thrown out, explain again, and guys, I promise you, if I have to do a 10-part series with Mike, you guys are going to get this in the fullness, because you're not going to believe, you know, what has taken place. So, Mike, you might have to call me all day. You hear me? If that's okay. I want to get this out before Tuesday. Tell me about what happened with the identification process, what they did at your case.
Okay. I had a motion hearing before my case stating that you could not use my photograph for identification purposes during my trial.
Mm-hmm.
And upon my trial, when I went to trial, now it was a signed motion, which became the law of my case, and it was protected by my constitutional rights. When I went to trial, the state's attorney turns around and has my picture with my name on the bottom of it, showing it to the victim, and was like, can you identify this individual? She looks at the name and looks at the picture and looks at me, and she identified me in court, knowing that it was a motion pending. So my lawyer say, well, Your Honor, man, I move to make a motion for a mistrial, man. I ask for this case to be thrown out because we was not supposed to went in front of this, went into this in front of these jewelry, in front of nobody, because that man was not, what they did was, it was a stack of photos. They placed everybody in a certain order. Out of 1 through 6, the first person was number 4. Out of 1 through 6, the next person was number 4. The next person was number 4. The next person was number 4. Every last one of my co-defendants. So out of 1 through 6, that was going to make me what? Number 4. Mm-hmm. So that's why the motion was the way that it was. And then she still didn't know who I was, because she kept saying, man, this might be him. And I think this him. She wasn't even really sure. So the judge excused everybody out of the courtroom and took it upon himself to help the state's attorney fix the motion that was already damaged and that was already used during my trial. And had her identify me, just say, oh yeah, that's him, outside the presence of the jury, and he said that made it right.
Wow.
So they said that made it right. So, you know, and I'm asking my lawyers, you know, oh whoa, how can they do that? My lawyer said they can't do that. He said, man, I'm not even sure what's going on right now. Yeah, my judge helped the state's attorneys fix the error that they made and swept it under the rug and said, okay, well now he's identified.
So let me ask you, Mike, could you give me the name of, the state's attorneys, that was in your case back then?
Well, it was two of them. It was Alex Foster and it was, Debbie Dwyer.
Debbie Dwyer. Okay, and what was the name of your trial judge?
My trial judge was Paul H. Weinstein.
Okay, and
he was the chief administrative judge.
And Paul Weinstein did something. He did something right after your case. What was it that he went in and did? I believe there was a motion or something that you could have, but I think you had 90 days or something to do something, and he went in and wiped that
away.
Yeah, explain that.
Yeah. Okay, after you get sentenced, you have 90 days to file motions to have your paperwork put in for your modification of sentence and appeals and things of that nature. Let them know that pretty much that you're gonna be filing for one. Now, right after, during my sentencing phase, what he did was he asked for a recess break. During the recess break, my father went outside to smoke a cigarette. He hurried up within 3 minutes, had them bring me back in the courtroom when no one was in there, and he gave me 3 life sentences in 25 years. And as far as this motion goes, I was told that a motion for a modification of sentence was being held in my own abeyance, secure until such time that I asked, but they would recommend that I not ask for it until I serve 15 to 20 years before even asking for it. Now, I had done that. I gave them 18, 19 years, and when I was going to ask for it, come to find out, the judge denied the modification as soon as it got put in, which meant no, it was not being held secure. He just flat out denied it without giving me time to work or anything since then.
Okay. All right. And so now we're gonna go back to your civil. We have 4 minutes. Do you wanna Okay. All right, so listen, guys, I promise you that this case right here gets, you know, crazier and crazier. So you've got the story. Mike was given 3 life sentences. Now, the other guys in the case, they all took pleas. Every one of them, with the exception of the minor, am I correct, Mike, got a life sentence plus 25 years, each one of them, right?
Yeah, they all got a life sentence.
Okay, so they got a life sentence plus 25 years, and you ended up getting three life sentences plus 25. Yeah, plus 25 years, and then they took so you know, you had the thing with the identification. Then shortly after you were sentenced, you know, he took it off the table. You know, with the thing that you just mentioned, you know, where you could go back in, Paul Weinstein took that off of the table and whatnot. So there was a reason why in his first interview I made mention of a civil case, because what you guys don't know is Paul Weinstein, the same judge that sat on Mike's criminal case, was also on his civil case. Mike's father sued civilly when he was in the Fairbridge Treatment Center, when he was his counselor raped Mike and six other kids. Well, sodomized Mike and five other kids, I'm sorry. So there was a monetary amount that was awarded. Mike never got to see a dime of that. He doesn't know the specifics, you know, regarding that, surrounding that, and whatnot. And I promise you guys, tune in to part three of this, and we're gonna tell you the bombshell of what's been going on. So Mike you've been in prison for how long now, Mike?
Almost 21 years.
21 years, yeah. And Mike, I want to I just want to thank you personally. You understand, for coming back, because I know I busted your balls in the first one. But you know what I mean? I keep telling you, I want to operate in truth. The truth needs no support. You understand what I'm saying? You've been tried. You've been convicted. That's not what we're trying to do and stuff. You've been fighting an uphill battle for 21 years. And, you know, I'm believing God and what we just discovered. You understand that is coming to a screeching halt soon. But, you know, I want you to be able to tell your story. I want you to tell the truth, though, when you tell your story. And, guys, if you tune into part three of this, prayerfully we'll be able to finish on that one. But, Mike, will you be able to call me back today?
Yeah.
Boy, you better sound more excited. Absolutely.
60 seconds remaining.
So, thank you so much for your time, Mike. I will wait. What, 45? When do you go back in?
2:30. But I'm gonna try to call you back.
Okay. Well, if you can't get it before then, I really want to get this thing done today. I appreciate you coming back. I mean, it definitely took courage. But you know, I. You understand, this is important. So I thank you very much. Right. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye. And this concludes, guys, part two of our interview. And like I say, I'm asking you guys to please stay tuned, because the plot thickens. Thank you so much. Bye bye.